Welcome, friends. I'm so happy that you've joined us today on the 7th episode of All the Things with Kristen Schindler. You know, the journey of parenting is one that we all navigate differently, and each journey is so different even within the same family as we welcome additional children, as we face challenges. Many times the twists and turns that we experience were not on the map. We didn't see them coming. And when they happen, they can throw us totally off course. Today's topic will focus on how postpartum and parent loss affected our guest and their season of parenting. For some, this topic will rekindle emotions of loss and sadness. We hope that by having them share their journey today, you will find a sense of connection to others who have traveled similar roads. Healing comes for people in many different ways. However, authentic connection and feeling you are part of a community who understands is critical. We hope that today we can be a small part of that healing for you, our listeners. Today, I welcome my friend and former student, Christy, as we talk about the challenges she and her husband, Brett, have faced as newlyweds, starting their journey as they continued to become parents and navigate all that this beautiful world and life has to offer. Welcome, Christy. I'm so happy to have you as a guest today. And I just want to thank you again for sharing your story and the journey that you've been on the last number of years with our listeners, because I've been following your journey and I know how it's filled with so much hope and just determination. And I just know that other people need that right now. I've talked to other people and similar situations, and you came to mind as someone who has come out kind of on the other side and found a way to pour into themselves in a healthy way. And I really wanted you to be able to share your story. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to talk to you. And I mean, also talk to an adult. Like, have adult conversation is pretty exciting to me.
That's an important part of the day.
Yes.
Adulting.
Yes.
Yeah. Pre-COVID, I would enjoy going to Target and just walking aimlessly and maybe getting some tea. And now it's so hot with masks on, I'm like, there's just no time for that. That's not going to happen.
Gosh, I can't even tell you the last time I was in Target. I am yearning to go mindlessly roam the aisles of Target.
Well, not much has changed there. I was there the other day, so I'll let you know that.
It's all the same.
Well, yes. Well, you and I first met many, many years ago when you were a student in my classroom. I don't even think I was married yet.
Or you will always and, be Frisbee to me.
Yes, Miss Frisbee. That was my maiden name. And you were a student. And then the following year, you went to high school and I coached field hockey. So you were a field hockey girl of mine. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about where you currently are in your parenting journey with, you know, your family, how many children you have, and what you do in and outside the home?
Sure. So my husband and I have been married for almost 11 years. We have a 6-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And we moved from Edwardsville to Nashville, Tennessee, the day after our wedding. My husband is a singer-songwriter, and so we just decided that why not, before we have kids or any kind of like real responsibility, let's give it a shot. And we have been here ever since.
Wow. So day after your wedding, you're like, we're hitting the road.
Yes.
And it's pretty exciting. And I'm glad that you mentioned about your husband, because I'd love to be able to interview him at a later time and have him on my podcast. But I want to make sure that for our listeners that, can you tell us his name and
Like, does he have something that he's recently dropped or anything that they could look up to support him?
Sure. So his name is Brett Shirokey. And he just signed a publishing deal with Seagale here in Nashville. And they are working on his album and like music videos and all of that fun stuff. But he has music on all social media platforms and Spotify and all that stuff that they can look him up.
Nice. Well, I will also make sure in the show notes on my website, kristenleeschindler.com, I'll make sure to have a link to his stuff so that way you can check him out because it's really good. So, can you tell us a little bit about your early newlywed life? Because you guys moved down to Nashville and pretty quickly after that event, you guys had your first challenge as husband and wife. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So, we are both speech language pathologists. When I moved, we both worked in school districts in Illinois. And we moved down here, and the plan was that I was going to work for the school district here in Nashville, and Brett would work for a nursing home, and do PRN work, so like just kind of as needed a few hours a week. But 4 months after our wedding, he was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And we were here by ourselves. We had only lived here for 4 months. We kind of knew our neighbors that lived across the hallway in our apartment complex, but not like that they were great friends. So the day after we found out, Brett was scheduled to have surgery, and our moms drove down here to be with us for the first week. After that, he had to go through chemo. It was like 1 week every day, and then one day the next week, one day the next week, and then it repeated three times. And for that time, we were pretty much on our own, making sure that like he got to all of his appointments and someone was there to drive him home. We enlisted these practically strangers that were across the hall from us to take him to a few appointments and sit with him because I had to work. I had used all my sick days, and we figured out how strong we were together, and it brought us closer together. I feel certain that like it happened for a reason, to teach us that we can do hard things on our own.
That's really powerful. I mean, you were like thrown into the fire of in sickness and in health, like right off the bat.
I mean, we were 24 and 20. And the thing is, like, we had no idea. Like, we didn't know any better. We didn't know what, newlywed life was supposed to be like. Obviously, like, this is more difficult, like the typical newlywed stuff. But it was normal to us, so we just went with it.
So during this time, then your moms came down, helped and stayed, and then they left. So who were the supporters during this time? Did you get closer to your neighbors? Did you just root in just between you and him? Did you check in and kind of like plug into a church family? How did that work? And how did it affect your newly married relationship with your husband?
Well, our family would come down like every once in a while, but it wasn't often. So I mean, they all had to work and they had jobs, and it's a 5 hour trip. So they would come down maybe like his sister came down once, and I think his mom came down once. But they would stay for a few days and then they would leave and go back. So we did, I think it did bring us closer to our neighbors just because, like, we were home and we were hanging out and they didn't know anybody either. They had moved in the same time we had from New York, so they didn't have anybody either. We also were extremely, extremely blessed to have found a church family shortly after we moved here, that just took us in and adopted us and treated us like their own. And so they were here to help us, but still, it was a fine line between like how much can we help these people that we really don't know, but they were here for us if we needed them. I think it definitely like brought us closer together as a couple.
Definitely. So So after that challenge, well, I guess the question is, during that challenge, before, he started chemo and, any kind of treatment, did you guys need to take necessary steps to be able to have a family for the future? And how was dealing with that, navigating that as newlyweds as well?
Yes, so they recommended that we bank sperm just in case something happened and his counts were low. And so we did that under the assumption that we would never have to use it because chemo doesn't affect that. And so it was just like a precaution that we were doing. When it came time for us to family plan and we were talking about having children, it just wasn't happening and we were struggling. I mean, this was like 4 years after deemed cancer-free. So we were struggling, we weren't conceiving, and so I just said, like, let's just go to the fertility clinic and check things out. Like, we know it might be an issue, so let's don't waste time. And we did, and they told us that it would be impossible for us to conceive on our own. That the counts were so low that there was no way anything would work. So that started our IVF journey.
Now, and I remember that that journey was not an easy one.
No,
Like I
well,
remember you sharing on Facebook. Can you tell us a little bit about how that journey went with IVF? How long did it take? What were the challenges you faced with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, what they don't tell you in IVF, I mean, obviously it's very like taxing and emotional, but you have to sign away all of your rights. Like, you have to decide what's going to happen to embryos if you guys get divorced or if someone passes away or if you have extras, what are you going to do with them? Are you going to donate them to science? Are you going to donate them to another family? Are you going to keep them frozen? Like, so 4 years into our marriage, we're basically having to decide all of these huge decisions that no one should have to make those decisions to have a family. But I just kept my faith in God that there was a reason and a purpose that we were having to go through this and that He was going to give us a baby, like in the end. So. My faith definitely is what got me through that, because it was hard. It's hard to, I mean, my entire life I wanted to be a mom, and that's what I thought my sole purpose was on this earth, was to be a mom and to be pregnant and carry my children. And when that thought is taken away and like it's a possibility that it might not happen, it's pretty shattering to have to process at the age of 27.
Well, especially coming off of the heels of such an emotional, trying, and scary time, right when your marriage had just started.
Yeah. Right.
Wow. So you ended up getting pregnant.
We did on the first try. We
Okay.
were Madeline and we had four frozen embryos. So we were able to get five embryos, but one quit growing.
So, did you, while this was going on with IVF, did you have good support? Was it a healthy postpartum time? Did you struggle after the birth of your first child? How was that for you?
So it was hard. We were the first of our friends to have a baby. And so, especially like going through IVF, like no one knows how to approach that, or how to talk to somebody about that. And so, like, that put a strain on our friendships that we had built. Being the first couple to have a child, we kind of, those friends all grew apart from us and kind of left us, for lack of better words. And so, I personally struggled a lot because I had no, I mean, I had my mom and I were very close and we talked every day. And she was there for me, but she was 5 hours away. So, you know, maternity leave, I was by myself for 8 weeks with this tiny human trying just to like survive and like keep her alive. So we didn't have a ton of support, but we kind of were used to that, I guess, because going through everything we had been through, we were just like, well, this is us and it's our story and kind of like we're on our own attitude. I think that I did have postpartum depression, but I think that I just like shoved all that away, because anybody that's been pregnant and has gone to their 6 week appointment, they give you the questionnaire to fill out and it's like, are you sad? Are you depressed? You know, do you have these horrible thoughts? And like, at the time I'm like, no, I don't want to put yes to any of these because I don't want them to take away my baby. Like, you know, you get in your head and you get paranoid and shoved it away. I was like, okay, I'm fine. Everything's fine. It's great. I'm just, this typical, they tell you on the internet. So everything's okay.
Right. So how old was Madeline then when you guys decided to expand your family?
We didn't decide at that time to expand our family. We were surprised that I was pregnant when Madeline was 6 months old. The fertility doctors told us that it would never, ever, ever happen on our own. They said, you know, those families that we tell that to and then they magically get pregnant, like that won't be you guys. Like, there is no way that you can conceive a baby naturally. So we believed them.
Well, you showed them, didn't you?
I most certainly did. So, she was 6 months old when I found out that I was pregnant with her. 15 months and 1 day old whenever I had Morgan. So it's the best surprise we have ever gotten. But definitely not what was in our, at the time.
Right. That was definitely a hill, right? When we talk about valleys and we talk about hills, like you'd been in the valley and you were digging your way out. And then, you know, you were like, I got a baby on my back. Her name's Madeline. Things are looking better. And then you're like, whoa, look at us. We got, look what we did.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I was still like postpartum. So then I'm like struggling because I feel like I've like deprived Madeline of being the only child and I'm going to take something away from her. And eventually after a few months and it had sunk in, very excited and ready and just trusting God's plan, because I mean, I feel like that's all we can do is just, okay, like your plan is greater than ours. You know, like, you know what you're doing. Clearly I don't. So.
Always. Always. That is the struggle, right? I jokingly tell my friend, it's like, we give him all the, like the plates, like we try not to like clean everything up because we know that he is the ultimate cleaner. Like he will do whatever. And, but that handing that over is so hard.
Oh, it is.
It's hard. It's like, let me just take that plate because you're just, I see a little spot. I'm really good at this. So let me just, you know, it's like,
I am very much a type A personality, very OCD, very much like my plan. I like my schedule. I like to know what's going to happen. I don't like surprises. And he has just, I mean, Morgan is our surprise. And it's him telling me like, you cannot plan this. Give it up. I've been trying to tell you. And I think when I had her, I finally realized like, okay, plan everything. Like just go with the flow, Christy, because that's all you can do.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So when you were parenting, being away, how did that affect your parenting? Maybe you didn't even know any different because that's just how you'd always parented, but did you end up making friends with people that had support close by, or did you surround yourself with just, you know, other parents who were kind of doing it solo, or what did that look like for you?
So we kind of just, because Brett was working so much. So because he's a singer songwriter, he was gone. He was gone almost every night, like, and working on the weekends and recording in his studio demos. so we were pretty much on our own. Like, we didn't have a support system. Would come and visit. We would see them about maybe once a month. Never long enough, and never, you know, as much as I wanted it to be. We had our church family that we would see on Sundays. I worked 2 days a week. So I worked Tuesdays and Thursdays, 12-hour days as a traveling therapist. And then I was home those other days, and it was on me. We didn't have anybody else to come get them, or being semi first-time parents with two kids, we were super protective. And because we didn't have a support system, didn't have babysitters. So no date nights, no time away. We just kind of had to figure it out on our own.
That is tricky. And I know how that feels, because when my children were little, my parents were still in the military, and my mother-in-law, she lives about 45 minutes away. So I had to rely on, because I was working full time, I had to rely on babysitters, you know, yeah, and do that kind of stuff. And so, but sometimes you look at, it was hard when I'd see friends whose moms and dads were just popping over to help. And I was like, yeah, that must be nice. Like, what's that like?
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And still this day, I'm like, oh yeah, you're just dropping your kids off tonight and going to go out to dinner and sleep in your house alone and pick them up in the morning. Like, tell me what that's like, because we've never had that.
Yeah. Well, and I can imagine, because shortly after this, you were working, you were having small children. You said your mom was like really close to you. And I remember your mom being very involved when you were a student of mine. You know, mm-hmm. You have a beautiful smile, and you know, your mom's smile is bright and cheery. And I remember seeing her at the sporting events, you know, sitting and cheering you on. So, how was your mom a support to you, even from afar, during that parenting journey in those early days?
I mean, she was like my connection to the outside world. We talked at least once a day, definitely more through like texts, and, you know, I would send her pictures of the kids, and we would FaceTime, and I mean, multiple times a week. We would pretty much every day that I was home, we would FaceTime and I would see them. And so even though they were far away and like not physically there, I always knew I had her, and I always knew if I needed her, she would be here in a second. But she was also sick. So shortly after Brett got the all clear, I guess it was like 2010, she was diagnosed with cancer as well. And she had kidney cancer. So there's no cure for kidney cancer. And found it had metastasized to her shoulder, and then some other places in her back. So for a long time, it was always, she was there, but she had doctor's appointments she had to go to, or, you know, she was going through radiation or trying this new experimental drug that she had to go get treatments for every day, or having surgeries. I don't know how many surgeries she had, and been recovered from, and then they'd get infected and she'd have to go back in. And so, there was always something, you know, that some reason that she couldn't be here as much as either of us wanted her to be.
And probably as much as she wanted to be. I'm sure that was very, very difficult. So there really wasn't, I mean, that was your normal then.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you were just, it was normal for you to be like in this season of people battling illness. And was there ever a time that you felt like you could breathe and, you know, it was quote unquote like the normal that other people were experiencing? Or did you always feel that it was kind of like a churning of constant like unrest?
Yeah, I think it was always unrest. From very early on, I remember her doctor telling her at one of her appointments, "You'll never live as long as your husband. Your husband will outlive you." And I don't remember, like, you know, they gave her however many months to live. And she was a fighter. I knew that that didn't mean anything to her. But there was always, it was back of my head, like, okay, well, they're going to go get the results from this after the scan, and we're going to see how much the cancer has grown. It, none of the treatments ever really shrunk it enough for us to, like, not be worried about it, or for me to not be worried about it. And she, I mean, like you said, like, she was just the most positive person. Every time she would get on the phone with me after an appointment, she would say, okay, everything's fine. But this is what the scan showed. You know, and I would call her and, like, have adult conversation on my nights home from work. And I just remember crying to her, like, but Mom, what if it's not? What if it's not fine? And what if, like, you die and we're here without you? And she, and I remember this conversation. She's like, well, I don't know, Christy, but it will be fine. You'll find a way and it will be fine. So,
wow.
Her faith and her belief in God and where she was going, she wasn't scared. Like, she was never scared to die because she knew where she was going. She was scared for us and how we live without her and, you know, what would happen to us. But she knew where she was going. And so, in a way, that brought peace, you know, a smidgen, because for us that are left here, like, it sucks.
It does.
So it was always there in the back of in my mind, I'm sure in her mind, it was always there that she's not going to see my kids grow up. She's not, you know, going to be at their graduation and their wedding. We won't have that family where grandma comes to visit and the kids go there for the summer. Like, that won't be us. And that's kind of a hard pill to swallow, especially whenever, like, as a, and we see their friends going and doing these things and they don't get that. I feel like not only am, like, I jealous of these people, but I feel like my kids are too. And I hate that for them.
Mm-hmm. That is a very hard conversation to have, because it does come up at all those milestones.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's, you move forward. Like my guest Sarah said, you move forward because time does that, right? Time always is moving forward, but those things that happen, they kind of trigger that pain and that sadness just in a different way. So how, you know, one of the things that I've been noticing with talking to different people and just in my own life, like, I'm a firm believer that God prepares us in different ways. They kind of like in like breadcrumbs is mm-hmm. my example. Like, there's kind of these things that if we're listening and we pay attention, that, you know, stories that other people are sharing with us or instances that are happening that I feel that God is preparing for us to walk through that next door, that next challenge, that we're going to need him. He's going to hold our hand, but he's kind of whispering to us and preparing our hearts. Do you feel that, like, that any of that happened surrounding your mom? And, cause you're the birth of your third child, like, how did that all work together at that time?
So at the time I didn't realize it, but looking back, I definitely see that God was preparing me to live a life as a mother without my mom. For Madeline's birth, our oldest, Mom was there. She went to the hospital with us. She was in the room with me. She was holding my hand and taking pictures. And, you know, she was there. She was the second person after me and my husband to hold Madeline. And so I got to have that with her, and that was so special. Morgan is a spitfire, and she has the world on her timeline, and she came so quickly that mom wasn't able to be there when she was born. They drove down like 3 or 4 times for like false alarms and like went back the next day. And finally, when it came time for Morgan to be born, they didn't leave because they assumed that it was another false alarm, and they missed Morgan being born by like an hour. And I was very sad at the time because I wanted her there, but it was also like, well, Brett and I did this on our own and it was so special and we had all this time to relax and we weren't worried about other people coming in. And, you know, so I had very mixed emotions about it. When I got pregnant with my son, she was on hospice. I got pregnant in June and she went on hospice right around that time or maybe a month or so later. And I remember her asking me, you know, can I be in the room when he's born? And at the time she couldn't even sit up. She had to lay flat because it hurt. It was to sit up. And I was like, Mom, like, how is that even possible? Like, how, you know, I questioned it and I was frustrated. Like, how could you do this? And, then her illness just progressed so quickly that she ended up passing away in November, when I was 6 months pregnant. So obviously she wasn't in the room. But I knew because I had done it with Morgan that I could do it on my own again, that it was okay, that it was just Brett and I. And so I definitely think like that was God's way of saying like, you can do this on your own. You've done it before. Two other kids. It will be okay. But it was still hard.
Yeah. So, and what's your son's name?
Nolan.
Nolan. So I know that you have been very vocal on your social media platform that after the birth of Nolan, I can't even imagine the you know, it's really like such a juxtaposition of you're 6 months pregnant, your mom passes, and the grief that you dealt with in losing her. But I'm sure there was also a peace knowing that she wasn't suffering anymore. Absolutely. Because of the illness.
Right. And that's another like breadcrumb from God that I think that he did that when I was pregnant. He took her when I was pregnant because I had to care. Like, had I not been pregnant, I don't know what would have happened with myself and my grief and my sadness. But when you're pregnant and you're a mom, you do what you have to do to take care of your babies. And so I did not eat as well as I should have, but I was eating. Had I not been pregnant, I probably would have been skipping meals and losing weight and, you know, buried in my grief. And so I think that he is what saved me from the loss of my mom. Definitely he's what got me through it. And gave me hope.
We have to have hope.
Absolutely.
So I know that you and I have talked about, and I've thought about, just with knowing your story, there had to be kind of even though your mom was sick, you were talking to her all the time. You know, you had that, like, that connection. So you find yourself having parented, even though they were still very little, because how old was Morgan when Nolan was born?
2.5. 2. Yeah.
Okay.
Keeping 2, 2.5.
So she's 2.
Madeline was 3.5.
Yeah. I mean, you're in the thick of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, that's treacherous times for people who aren't dealing with grief. And then, you know, it must have been very difficult, your parenting before the loss of your mom, and now you are parenting after the loss. And how did, and maybe it didn't, but did anything change in your perspective of parenting after the loss of your mom? Or can you tell us a little bit about after that time?
I mean, postpartum, like after I had my son, it was just like survival at that point. Just going through the motions, I feel like. At that time, things didn't change. And I think, well, and again, at the 6-week appointment with your doctor, you know, you get the questionnaire, you fill out all the questions. I check, you know, nothing's wrong with me. I don't need help. I can do this all on my own type of personality, until it got to be too much. And so definitely I was suffering from postpartum depression and anxiety. I started having panic attacks again. I had panic attacks in college, but I was having them again. And so I was just trying to survive at that point, knowing that my mom would want me to be happy and knowing that she would want me to find joy in my children. I was just trying to survive. And it just got to be too much. And I knew that I wasn't helping anyone by trying to do it by myself. And nothing was getting better. Things were getting much worse. And I was in a very like dark, deep, alone place. And I knew that I needed help. I knew that I needed to admit that I couldn't do it on my own anymore.
So that was self-realization on your part, that you knew you needed to get help. What did that help look like? How did that look for you?
So Nolan was about 8 months old. And it was like time for my doctor appointment. And I sat down and she said, "How are you?" And I just started sobbing, like, just uncontrollably. And we talked and she said, "Well, you seem a little sad. You know, do you think some medication would help?" And I said, "Yes, like, absolutely. I need help. Like, this isn't going to go away. It's been 8 months." And so she prescribed me some anxiety medication. And since then I've been on it. Nolan is 3 years old now and I still take it, just because I do still suffer from anxiety. And this season of life is very hard.
Yes.
You know, so like just a little help, with the nerves. But no, like there is no shame to me in taking medication and realizing that there's some kind of chemical imbalance in my brain right now. And that I need a little help. So he was 8 months old. It was October. In January, I, decided that the medicine had started to work. I started to come out of that fog. I wasn't depressed anymore. And I knew that I needed to work on myself. I was 33. And I didn't want my kids to lose their mom whenever they were older. My mom was 55 when she passed away, so that gave me 22 years. And it terrified me. I don't want my kids to have to go through this. So I knew that I needed to make a change, and I started working out, and I started eating healthier. And that saved me.
Well, and not only the working out, but the community that you found. Can you talk to us a little bit about how that community and partnering with you helped you?
So the community that I'm in, it's just a group of women online, which is what I needed at the time. The workouts are at home. So I don't have to leave my house. I don't have to load my kids into the car to go to the gym. It was just what worked best for me. And I found other moms that were going through the same thing. And I started to talk to my friends more, the few friends that I had that had kids. And they were struggling too. And so I went to Brett and I was like, Brett, if other people are struggling with this, but they're not talking about it, how many other moms out there are like feeling alone and miserable and depressed and anxious? Like, I feel like this story, that my story up until this point, if it can help one person, then I feel like I need to do this. And it was definitely God's calling. It was definitely Him like nudging me and putting this on my heart to help others, because never in a million years would I think that I would be doing what I was doing now. I don't know if you remember from field hockey, but I wasn't the most athletic.
What?
You gotta go with it whenever he throws you in the fire. So here I am.
Well, and I can just see, you know, following you on social media, I can see the energy and just the confidence, and but more so just your heart for others. And, you know, I think that that's when you can see the suffering of someone else and you can say, I'm here to walk beside you. And I know our stories may not be identical, but our hearts have grieved something so similar that, you know, I can see myself in your face. I can see, you know, what the burdens that I've been carrying. I see the same ones sticking out of your backpack, sister. So, right. You know, let's just help each other out. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I feel so passionate about this podcast is, you know, you're one student of thousands that I had in, you know, my years of teaching. And, you know, I know that your story needs to be shared with other people, because, you know, I know there are other people that think, man, the hits just keep coming.
Exactly.
And they're not good. And, you know, and a lot of times, you know, those things would back to the very first 4 months you've been married and, you know, Brett's diagnosed. I mean, some people, their faith would have been like out the window 4 months in.
Yeah.
So yeah. Where are you now in your faith walk and your relationship with God, and how do you think that's changed in your journey?
It's definitely evolved. Growing up, I went to church and Sunday school every Sunday, and like that's just what we did, and like I knew God, but like, you know, it was never like front and center. When Brett and I got engaged, it was really important for us to find a church that we could go to together. And we found one in Illinois when we made the move down here. Like, we had to start over again. And we were really lucky. There's like 3 Lutheran churches in Nashville. And we found one 10 minutes from our house and fell in love with the people there. They've taken us under their wings. They've adopted us like as their own children, treat us like their own. Two of them, one couple came to my mom's funeral 5 hours away. One of them, another couple, they let us come with them. So we're so tremendously blessed that we have them in our lives and that they love our children. But there was a time right after Mom was diagnosed, right after we got through Brett's thing, that I was just so mad at him. I was so mad at God. And I remember talking to our pastor at the time, And I remember him saying, like, it's okay. Pay to be angry with God. God can handle it. He knows you. He knows your story. He through. And it's okay to be frustrated. But know that when you're done being angry and it melts away, God will still be here for you. And I was angry for a long time. Took a little hiatus, but we went back and we found ourselves there again. We found the messages to like connect with us. And now in this journey, since losing my mom, I've seen God's work. I've seen his hand at work in my mom's life, how he called her home, just how, you know, the birth of my kids and breadcrumbing and preparing me for this life without her, that you can't deny it. You can't deny that he's there and he has a hand in all of this. So it's very, my faith is very important to me today. Starting this health and fitness journey, I also started doing devotionals every day, and connecting me to him even more than I would have had I not even started being a part of these challenge groups. And so now I'm also co-running a faith-based moms group on Facebook, which never in a million years did I ever expect to be doing that. But it's moms from all over, and we do Bible studies together, and we just pray for each other. And it's just an amazing thing to see how his hand is, you know, in all of it, in every aspect of our lives, and everything we have, we owe to him. Is just, it's pretty amazing.
That's an amazing story. It reminds me of the word, brutiful. Like, it's been brutal. You know, those valleys were so deep and so dark, but those hills that, you know, that you've been back on, it surely is a beautiful story of redemption and hope, and just him preparing you for, you know, your work continues. You yeah. know, you have more work to do, girl. Sorry, there's no rest for you.
No pressure or anything.
No pressure, get going. But seriously though, it's, you know, my grandma often, I'll talk to her and she's going to be 90, and she'll say, you know, and her husband has deceased, and, you know, recently deceased, and she'll say, I don't know why the good Lord hasn't taken me yet. I'll say, well, Graham, you know what? He obviously has more work for you to do. So you better get busy, you know, think about what you haven't finished yet. I don't know, but, you know, and she laughs and I laugh, but you're doing great work, girl.
Thank
you. Really are. So A plus for you.
Thank you very much.
That's the old teacher in me. Well, do you have any parting words for our listeners today, Christy? Anything that you want to say to people who are listening and know people in similar situations, or they're in similar situations? What do you want them to hear?
I definitely don't be scared to ask for help, whether it's from a doctor, if you're postpartum, 8 months like I did, because it's not worth it. And don't be afraid to ask God for help, that he's there and he knows the desires of our hearts and he will fulfill them.
It's beautiful. Thank you so much for being my guest today. And I can't wait to have you back another time and hear about more of this awesome pouring into other women's lives that you're doing. So thank you so much, friend. You have a great night. Try to get some rest.
Definitely. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope that Christy's story has encouraged you. If you have found yourself in similar valleys of life, we all have those hills and valleys, those times that we can see clearly and far, and the sweeping vistas just take our breath away with their beauty. Our souls are filled and we feel full. Then there are other times that we found ourselves buried buried under boulders that we didn't see coming, and diagnosis that just didn't seem to go away. And these are when the valleys are so deep and so dark, there doesn't seem to be a way out. Know that when you find yourselves in either place, you are not alone. There are other people who have walked before you who can help you navigate. There are people who are there now who can walk beside you. And there will be people in the future who you will need to go down in the valley and help lead out. For more information about postpartum depression support and links to Christy's business page and her husband's music page, visit KristenLeeSchindler.com. You can find all the links under the podcast tab under Episode 7, The Hills and Valleys. Also, please subscribe to this podcast on whatever listening platform you prefer so that you can stay in the loop for when future episodes are released weekly. Lastly, we all need hope. And that hope can come when we think about people who are on our hearts and reach out to them. If there's someone who is on your heart today, please share this podcast so that they can benefit and find encouragement through Christy's story. We look forward to having you join us next time on All the Things with Kristen Schindler. And remember, your story matters. Please keep sharing it with others. They really need to hear it.